Well, it is true that we often don't see the truth until we're shown by someone else what the truth is. And so that's why it's not wrong to help other people, to try to show people the truth, even though it's far better when they can discover the truth on their own. It's going to have a much more profound effect on their lives, and they'll probably reject the truth that we show them, even if only for a short while, because they don't have it embedded in their own minds from having discovered it on their own. Today is December 15th, 2023, and the time is 15:02. Let me check that. I can't see it. There it is. Yeah. 15:02 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again. I love you. And we're studying The Crucible of Credible Creed, Chapter 2, Paragraph 3, as well as the books of 2 Samuel, Jeremiah, and Matthew. And for today, we have Chapter 2, Paragraph 3 from the Crucible article. And, oh yes, I want to talk about some things, but we got a lot of reading to do today. Since radiocarbon dating methods give variable results, we talked about that, and have significantly greater error margins than the dates of the conventionally accepted Egyptian chronology, the dates for the pharaohs who reigned near to the time of Amenhotep I are considered to be better pinpointed by the astronomy. Let's see what I can do with this. Lock this in here at a slightly lower brightness. It's too bright. It's better, I think. So the dates for the pharaohs who reigned near the time of Amenhotep I are considered better pinpointed by the astronomy. The pivotal date is the ninth year of Amenhotep I as 1517. That's from the Oxford History of Ancient Egypt by Ian Shaw, page 2 to 3. Oxford University Press, 2000 of the Common Era. The best known rule for Amenhotep I is thus 1526 to 1506. I think we would also say 1526 to 1505, or maybe 1525 to 1504 even. It's in that range. It's in that vicinity, if we accept 1517 as year 9, and the fact that he ruled for 20 years according to at least some version of Manetho, 20 or 21 years in different versions of Manetho. By the way, let's look at Manetho since we just mentioned him. This is where we get a lot of the, well, all of the numbers that we quote from Manetho come from the different sources of Manetho, which are all compiled within this one book. For example, this is one version of one compilation book, which is by Waddell. It's called Manetho with an English Translation, 1940, W.G. Waddell. It's a free book on archive.org and so on, but let's get this in a two-page view here. Here we go. Now let's look at what we were just saying. Amenhotep, that's Dynasty 18, so we'll just scroll over to Dynasty 18 here in this book. There's also Fotheringham, Chronology of the Bible. That book has also the Egyptian dynasties in a much more condensed form than this. Fotheringham, and it's available from the same source, archive.org, let's see, you know, for free. And we can look at this for dynasty. What dynasty are we looking at? That's 28. Yeah, we have to jump back. We have to try and save time here. We don't have time. This is close to 18 right here, I think. I think this is possibly 18 right here, what I'm looking at. I can tell because I recognize the long form here. I need to get a quicker way to scroll through these pages. The long account given there, that's 19. Yep, so that was the 18 we just looked at, all this long account. That's Josephus talking about all these things in one of his works. Josephus, it's against Appian, that work, Contra Appionem. But in this dynasty, we can see, I should be using Fotheringham because it's much quicker, but it's okay to use Waddell. We see that Amenophis is given 21 years there by Eusebius, and is given 31 years in the Armenian version, I think that is it? No, that's a different Amenophis, sorry. But in Africanus, he's given... where is it? We've got to go back one more. Amenophis. 24 or 21? Right, 21 is a corrected number. Because the total didn't add up using 24. That's why they corrected it, I believe. Here he's given 21 also by the Armenian version of Eusebius. So yeah, 21 years. So 1526, or 15, let's see, say 1525 BCE to 1504 would be one possible chronology, and that allows 11 years for his successor, Thutmose I, which fits well with what we've written in the articles that we've written, yours truly being the author. And now we're going to do our daily proverb, because we've got to move on quickly. Proverbs 14 and 9, foolish little children are those who make a derision of guilt, but among the upright ones there is agreement. And 2 Samuel, we were there, 13? No, 14 I think we're at now, aren't we? So what do we have? Let me check. It's 14. I'm sure I read it. Just not sure where it is here. Well, I can just go and make a manual correction. I mean, I read it, but maybe I didn't read it in this version. It's possible. Now, Joab, the son of... Maybe I read it in my hard copy. The son of Zeruiah came to know that the king's heart was toward Absalom. Accordingly, Joab sent to Tekoa and took from there a wise woman and said to her, "Go in mourning, please, and dress yourself, please, with garments of mourning, and do not rub yourself with oil, and you must become like a woman here who has been mourning many days over someone dead, and you must come into the king and speak to him a word like this." With that, Joab put the words in her mouth, and the Tekoite woman proceeded to come into the king and fall upon her face to the earth and prostrate herself and say, "Do save, O king." At this the king said to her, "What is the matter with you?" To this she said, "For a fact, I am a widowed woman now that my husband is dead, and your maidservant had two sons, and the two of them began to struggle with each other in the field, while there was no deliverer to part them. Finally, the one struck the other down and put him to death, the other, and here all the family have risen up against your maidservant to keep saying, 'Give over the striker of his brother, that we may put him to death for the soul of his brother whom he killed, and let us even annihilate the heir. And they will certainly extinguish the glow of my charcoals that has remained, so as to assign to my husband neither a name nor a remnant on the surface of the ground.' Then the king said to the woman, 'Go to your house, and I myself shall give command regarding you.' At this the Tekoite woman said to the king, 'Upon me, O my lord the king, be the error, and also upon the house of my father, while the king and his throne are innocent.' And the king went on to say, 'If there is anyone speaking to you, you must also bring him to me, and he will never hurt you again.' But she said, 'Let the king please remember Jehovah your God, that the avenger of blood may not be continually causing ruin, and that they may not annihilate my son.' To this he said, 'As Jehovah is living, not a single hair of your son will fall to the earth.' The woman now said, 'Let your maidservant please speak a word to my lord the king.' So he said, 'Speak.' And the woman went on to say, 'Why then have you reasoned like this against the people of God? As the king is speaking this word, he is like one that is guilty, in that the king does not bring back his own banished one. For we shall die without fail, and be like waters that are being poured down to the earth, which cannot be gathered. But God will not take away a soul. And he has thought out reasons why the one banished should not be banished from him. And now that I have come in to speak this word to the king, my lord, it is because the people made me afraid. So your maidservant said, 'Let me speak, please, to the king. Perhaps the king will act on the word of his slave girl.' Because the king proceeded to listen so as to deliver his slave girl out of the palm of the man seeking to annihilate me and my lone son from the inheritance given by God. Then your maidservant said, let the word of my lord the king serve please to give rest. For just like an angel of the true God is the way my lord the king is, to distinguish what is good and what is bad. And may Jehovah your God himself prove to be with you. The king now answered and said to the woman, do not please hide from me a thing about which I am asking you. To this the woman said, let my lord the king speak, please. And the king went on to say, is the hand of Joab with you in all this? Then the woman answered and said, as your soul is living, O my lord the king, no man can go to the right or go to the left from all that my lord the king has spoken, for it was your servant Joab that commanded me, and he it was that put in the mouth of your maidservant all these words. For the sake of altering the face of the matter, your servant Joab has done this thing. But my lord is wise, as with the wisdom of the angel of the true God, so as to know all that is in the earth. Subsequently the king said to Joab, hear now, I shall certainly do this thing, so go, bring the young man Absalom back. At this Joab fell upon his face to the earth, and prostrated himself, and blessed the king, and Joab went on to say, today your servant does know that I have found favor in your eyes, O my lord the king, because the king has acted on the word of his servant. With that Joab rose up and went to Geshur, and brought Absalom to Jerusalem. However the king said, let him turn around, let him turn toward his own house, but my face he may not see. So Absalom turned toward his own house, and the face of the king he did not see. Now compared with Absalom, there proved to be no man so beautiful in all Israel as to be praised so much. From the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, there proved to be no defect in him. Absalom, you remember, had killed Amnon, because Amnon had raped Tamar, the sister of Absalom. And Absalom, when he shaved his head, it occurred at the end of every year that he would shave it, because it was so heavy upon him, he shaved it. He weighed the hair of his head 200 shekels by the royal stone weight. Whenever he shaved his head, 200 shekels, which would be equivalent to, I need to blow my nose here, 5 pounds. 200 shekels. 5 pounds of hair. And there came to be born to Absalom 3 sons and 1 daughter, whose name was Tamar. She proved to be a woman most beautiful in appearance, named with the same name as his sister Tamar. Is it not? And Absalom continued dwelling in Jerusalem for 2 full years, and the face of the king he did not see. So Absalom sent for Joab to send him to the king, and he did not consent to come to him. Then he sent a second time, and he did not consent to come. He wanted Joab to come to him and send him to the king. Finally he said to his servants, see Joab's tract of land beside mine, and there he has barley. Go and set it ablaze with fire. Accordingly, the servants of Absalom set the tract of land ablaze with fire. At this, Joab rose and came to Absalom at the house and said to him, why did your servants set the tract of land that is mine ablaze with fire? So Absalom said to Joab, look, I sent to you saying, come here and let me send you to the king. I sent to you saying, come here and let me send you to the king, saying, why have I come from Geshur? It says here that Absalom wanted to send Joab to the king. I thought he wanted Joab to send him to the king, it said. Oh no, he wanted to send Joab to the king. Okay, verse 29. Yeah, that's another interpretation of that. Yeah, sure. That's another meaning there. Why have I come from Geshur? It would be better for me that I should still be there, and now let me see the face of the king, and if there is any error in me, he must then put me to death. Subsequently, Joab came into the king and told him. Then he called Absalom, who now came into the king and prostrated himself to him, falling upon his face to the earth before the king, after which the king kissed Absalom. So we see the events that happened in the family of David, the family life of David and his sons, with Absalom being, of course, one of David's sons. We get to know a lot about David. That's why we made the comment earlier, and I forget the source of the comment, but the comment that we know more about David than any other person of that ancient, of such an ancient time period. We just know a lot about him, considering how long ago that was that he lived. I mean, we're talking more than 1,000 years before the Common Era, when David was king. So it's really something remarkable. Let's move on quickly. I think we better move quickly, if we're even going to have time. Jeremiah 49, for the sons of Ammon, this is what Jehovah has said. I don't think we have time. Well, maybe we do. Yeah, it looks good. Clark calls it, this chapter, a collection of prophecies relating to several nations in the neighborhood of Judea. And like those preceding, he says, are supposed to have been fulfilled by the ministry of Nebuchadnezzar during the 13-year siege of Tyre, which is interesting, that comment that he makes. Now, Jeremiah 49, little children, for the sons of Ammon, this is what Jehovah has said. Are there no sons that Israel has, or is there no inheritor that he has? Why is it that Malcolm has taken possession of Gad, and his own people have taken up dwelling in Israel's very cities? Malcolm is the god of the sons of Ammon. Therefore, look, there are days coming, is the utterance of Jehovah, and I will cause the alarm signal of war to be heard even against Rabbah of the sons of Ammon, and she will certainly become a mound of a desolate waste, and her dependent towns themselves will be set aflame in the very fire. And Israel will actually take possession of those in possession of him, Jehovah has said. Verse 3, howl, O Heshbon, for Ai, how else can we say it? Ai, we can say it, we can pronounce it. Ai has been despoiled. Cry out, O dependent towns of Rabbah. Gird sackcloth on yourselves. Wail and rove about among the stone pens, for Malcolm himself will go even into exile, his priests and his princes altogether. Why do you brag about the low plains, your flowing low plain, O daughter unfaithful, you the one trusting in her treasures, saying, who will come to me? Here I am bringing in upon you a dreadful thing, is the utterance of the sovereign Lord Jehovah, Jehovah of armies, from all those round about you, and you people will certainly be dispersed, each one in his own direction, and there will be no one collecting together those running away. But afterward I shall gather the captive ones of the sons of Ammon, is the utterance of Jehovah. For Edom, this is what Jehovah of armies has said, is there no longer any wisdom in Teman? His counsel perished. From those having understanding, has their wisdom gone to putrefying? Flee, let yourselves give way. Go down deep in order to dwell, O inhabitants of Dedan. For the disaster of Esau I will bring in upon him, the time that I must turn my attention to him. If grape gatherers themselves actually came in to you, would they not let some gleanings remain? If thieves came in by night, they would certainly cause only as much ruin as they wanted. But as for me, I will strip Esau bare. I will uncover his places of concealment, and one will not be able to hide oneself. His offspring, and his brothers, and his neighbors, will certainly be despoiled, and he will not be. Do leave your fatherless boys. I myself shall preserve them alive, and your own widows will trust even in me. For this is what Jehovah has said. Look, although it is not their custom to drink the cup, they will drink without fail. This is very probably the cup of the wine of the anger of the wrath of God the Almighty. It's their punishment. And they will become crazed with wine, and they will then suffer all kinds of problems and, you know, receive the discipline from Jehovah. And you yourself, will you be absolutely left unpunished? You will not be left unpunished, for you will drink without fail. For by my own self I have sworn, is the utterance of Jehovah, that nothing but an object of astonishment a reproach, a devastation, and a malediction will Bozrah become, and all her own cities will become devastated places to time indefinite. There is a report that I have heard from Jehovah, and there is an envoy that is sent among the nations, saying, collect yourselves together and come against her and rise up to battle. For look, I have made you small indeed among the nations, despised among mankind. The shuddering you caused has deceived you, the presumptuousness of your heart. O you who are residing in the retreats of the crag, holding the height of the hill, although you build your nest high up just like an eagle, down from there I shall bring you, is the utterance of Jehovah, and Edom must become an object of astonishment. Everyone passing along by her will stare in astonishment and whistle on account of all her plagues, just as in the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah and her neighbor towns, Jehovah has said, no man will dwell there, and no son of mankind will reside in her as an alien. Look, someone will come up just like a lion from the proud thickets along the Jordan to the durable abiding place, but in a moment I will make him run away from her. And the one who is chosen I shall appoint over her. For who is like me, and who will challenge me, and who now is the shepherd that can stand before me? Therefore hear, O men, the counsel of Jehovah that he has formulated against Edom, and his thoughts that he has thought out against the inhabitants of Teman. Surely the little ones of the flock will be dragged about. Surely on account of them he will make their dwelling place become desolate. At the sound of their falling, the earth has begun to rock. There is an outcry. The sound of it has been heard even at the Red Sea. Look, just like an eagle, someone will ascend and pounce down, and he will spread out his wings over Bozrah, and the heart of the mighty men of Edom will actually become in that day like the heart of the wife having distress in childbirth. For Damascus, Hamath and Arpad have become ashamed, for it is a bad report that they have heard. They have disintegrated. In the sea there is anxious care. It is not able to keep undisturbed. Damascus has lost courage. She has turned to flee, and sheer panic has seized her. Distress and birth pangs themselves have taken hold of her, as with a woman that is giving birth. How is it that the city of praise has not been abandoned, the town of exultation? Therefore, her young men will fall in her public squares, and all the men of war themselves will be brought to silence in that day as the utterance of Jehovah of armies. And I will set a fire ablaze on the wall of Damascus, and it will certainly devour the dwelling towers of Ben-Hadad, for Kedar, and the kingdoms of Hazor, which Nebuchadrezzar, the king of Babylon, struck down. This is what Jehovah has said. Rise up, go to Kedar. Go up to Kedar, O men, and despoil the sons of the east. Their own tents and their own flocks will be taken, their tent cloths and all their articles and their own camels will be carried off from them, and they will certainly cry out to them. Fright is all around. Flee, take flight, far away. Go down deep in order to dwell, O inhabitants of Hazor, is the utterance of Jehovah. For Nebuchadrezzar, the king of Babylon, has formulated a counsel even against you, and has thought out against you a thought. Rise up, O men, go up against the nation that is at ease, dwelling in security, is the utterance of Jehovah. No doors and no bar does it have. Solitary they reside, and their camels must become a plunder, and the multitude of their livestock a spoil. And I will scatter them to every wind, those who have their hair clipped at the temples, and from all regions near it I shall bring in their disaster, is the utterance of Jehovah. And Hazor must become the lair of jackals, a desolate waste of time indefinite. No man will dwell there, and in her no son of mankind will reside as an alien. This is what occurred as the word of Jehovah to Jeremiah the prophet concerning Elam in the beginning of the kingship of Zedekiah the king of Judah, saying, this is what Jehovah of armies has said. Here I am breaking the bow of Elam, the beginning of their mightiness, and I will bring in upon Elam the four winds from the four extremities of the heavens, and I will scatter them to all these winds, and there will prove to be no nation to which the dispersed ones of Elam will not come. And I will shatter the Elamites before their enemies and before those seeking for their soul, and I will bring upon them a calamity. My burning anger is the utterance of Jehovah, and I will send after them the sword until I shall have exterminated them. And I will set my throne in Elam, and I will destroy out of there the king and the princes, is the utterance of Jehovah. And it will certainly occur in the final part of the days that I shall gather the captive ones of Elam, is the utterance of Jehovah. This gathering back of captives is a recurring theme, not just for Jehovah's people, but also for the nations upon whom Jehovah exercises his judgment, that is, the nations who are not his people, in addition to, of course, the judgment and gathering back of his own people. Let's read Matthew before we get distracted with anything else here. Matthew 23. We don't have much time. Then Jesus spoke to the crowds and to his disciples, saying, "The scribes and the Pharisees have seated themselves in the seat of Moses. Therefore, all the things they tell you, do and observe, but do not do according to their deeds, for they say but do not perform. They bind up heavy loads and put them upon the shoulders of men, but they themselves are not willing to budge them with their finger. All the works they do to be viewed by men, for they broaden the scripture containing cases that they wear as safeguards, and enlarge the fringes of their garments. They like the most prominent place at evening meals, and the front seats in the synagogues, and the greetings in the marketplaces, and to be called rabbi by men. But you do not you be called rabbi, for one is your teacher, whereas all you are brothers. Moreover, do not call anyone your father on earth, for one is your father, the heavenly one. Neither be called leaders, for your leader is one, the Christ. But the greatest one among you must be your minister. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you shut up the kingdom of the heavens before men, for you yourselves do not go in, neither do you permit those on their way in to go in. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you traverse sea and dry land to make one proselyte, and when he becomes one, you make him a subject for Gehenna, twice as much so as yourselves. Woe to you, blind guides, who say, if anyone swears by the temple, it is nothing, but if anyone swears by the gold of the temple, he is under obligation. Fools and blind ones, which in fact is greater, the gold or the temple that is sanctified, the gold? Also, if anyone swears by the altar, it is nothing, but if anyone swears by the gift on it, he is under obligation. Blind ones, which in fact is greater, the gift or the altar that sanctifies the gift? Therefore, he that swears by the altar is swearing by it and by all the things on it, and he that swears by the temple is swearing by it and by him that is inhabiting it, and he that swears by heaven is swearing by the throne of God and by him that is sitting on it. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you give the tenth of the mint and the dill and the cumin, but you have disregarded the weightier matters of the law, namely justice and mercy and faithfulness. These things it was binding to do, yet not to disregard the other things. Blind guides who strain out the gnat but gulp down the camel. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you cleanse the outside of the cup and of the dish, but inside they are full of plunder and immoderateness. Blind Pharisee, cleanse first the inside of the cup and of the dish, that the outside of it also may become clean. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you resemble whitewashed graves, which outwardly indeed appear beautiful, but inside are full of dead men's bones and of every sort of uncleanness. In that way you also outwardly indeed appear righteous to men, but inside you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you build the graves of the prophets and decorate the memorial tombs of the righteous ones, and you say, if we were in the days of our forefathers, we would not be sharers with them in the blood of the prophets. Therefore you are bearing witness against yourselves that you are sons of those who murdered the prophets. Well then, fill up the measure of your forefathers. Serpents, offspring of vipers, how are you to flee from the judgment of Gehenna? For this reason, here I am, sending forth to you prophets and wise men and public instructors. Some of them you will kill and impale, and some of them you will scourge in your synagogues and persecute from city to city, that there may come upon you all the righteous blood spilled on earth, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah the son of Berechiah, whom you murdered between the sanctuary and the altar. Truly, I say to you, all these things will come upon this generation. Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the killer of the prophets and stoner of those sent forth to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together the way a hen gathers her chicks together under her wings, but you people did not want it. Look, your house is abandoned to you, for I say to you, you will by no means see me from henceforth until you say, blessed is he that comes in Jehovah's name. That's the end of Matthew 23. That's the end of our scripture reading. We have a couple of minutes. I wanted to look up Hazor if we have time here. Be nice to do that. We can. Let's see if we can do it here. Hazor. Hazor, Hazor. What do we got? Let's say site, full colon, will of Jehovah. .com. Hazor. It'll bring up the articles containing the word Hazor. So Trojan War, yeah. So that was the one. Yeah, it was Hazor. Isn't that the one? I think that's the one where we have this incredible results of archaeology. We've already got Trojan War open, but let's look for Hazor. Right. Let's just make it smaller so we can read it. Where are we? Hazor. Right. It looks like there's a lot of work done at Hazor. I'm looking for the work of a particular archaeologist, if I can find it here, but is it Betancourt? No, Betancourt was another archaeologist. Yadin had something to say about it, it looks like, too. Yeah, so there's a lot said about Hazor here. I'm trying to think if Hazor was the one that was such an important city that was that was given radiocarbon dating, was redated using radiocarbon dating by a student of one of the archaeologists. I'm trying to think of his name. A Jewish archaeologist who doesn't believe the Bible was the teacher of the student who made these datings, but the student is not like the teacher. In that regard, he doesn't come up with the same results or promote the same belief system as his teacher. Let's see. Where is it now? Where's the radiocarbon dating, I wonder? How can I find that quickly? Let's see. Mazar, maybe. Wait a minute. Oh, it's Megiddo I'm thinking of. Yeah, it's Megiddo. Yeah, I think I'm thinking of Megiddo. Was the one. That's right. I think it was Megiddo that's... Tofolo, there it is. Tofolo, 2014. Megiddo was the city. I was trying to remember the name of the city. It had such a great significance to our understanding of the chronology and the, you know, the different layers of the cities in Israel around the time of Israel attacking, you know, around the time when Israel, Joshua and Israel came and crossed the Jordan, that time period. And we were able to date that much better because of this, or, well, we already had the dating for it, but we're able to confirm the dating because of the work of Tofolo, 2014. And other people, too, like Levy and other people. There are many other people, of course, but Tofolo did this remarkable, groundbreaking research. Okay. We're done for our study. We're done today. It's marvelous to be done. It's marvelous to see you again. Let me know how you're doing. It's December 15th, 2023 of the Common Era, 1535 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you. And on my behalf, this is Gully, and this is Cassie saying bye for now.